This is SigilCast, and I'm Nate Fowler.
And I'm Jay Williams.
And we're here to talk to you today about a whole bunch of really crazy ideas.
Crazy ideas that I have no idea what you're going to talk about.
That's right, that's right.
We purposely unscripted today.
Yes. To get you started, there was this really cool study that came out that said that basically we know that in our brains, we can only hold so many different pieces of information.
Right.
So we actually walk around every day and we're experiencing millions and millions of things, but we can only hold 7 to 9 pieces of information.
Right.
And our brain just throws out the rest. So they did a study. They did a study to see, what does that mean? What does it mean to only be able to hold that much information? What does it mean? Well, I don't want to jump ahead. So what they did was they had a bunch of people that came in and they said, okay, we're going to give you numbers and we want you to remember those numbers and then go and walk down the hall and tell those numbers to this person in this other office. Now, what they didn't tell these people was that in between those two places, they were going to be interrupted by this beautiful young woman who would ask them a question. And so what she would do is they would give them a number, like, let's say 012. And they would be interrupted by the woman, and she would say, we have some snacks available. Would you like brownies, or would you like this fruit cup? Well, an interesting thing happened. The more numbers that you had to remember, the more inclined you were to go for the brownie.
I wonder why that is.
Essentially, people made a choice that had to be in the moment if they had too much information in their head. And they would make the choice that was the easiest.
Kind of like satisficing.
Mm-hmm. Self-gratifying, satisficing, mm-hmm. Exactly. And they would continue to do it every single time, to the point where if you had like 3 numbers in your head, you would pick the fruit cup about 80% of the time. And I don't even like fruit cups, so that's pretty funny. But the rest of the time, if you had 7 numbers in your head, you always picked the brownie.
Very interesting.
It was interesting. Now, they have studies done on people who are more intelligent. People who are more intelligent are...
than the brownies?
Yeah.
Okay, just curious.
Maybe from the brownies. are more inclined to have things going on with them. People who are more intelligent are more inclined to sometimes be depressed or be more inclined to be able to go into trance easily or more inclined to do things that are dangerous. Like way dangerous, not just like a little bit dangerous.
Like extreme.
Extreme.
Right.
So what's the correlation? Is there a correlation? So that's what we're here to talk about.
Very cool. This is going to be a fun day. Fun podcast.
So yeah, I really thought that it was really cool that people would actually put techniques that we've been using for years to the test, mm-hmm. and see the actual results.
Right.
And this one was really fun because it's one that you can pretty much do on anybody in your life. You can actually go up to somebody and say, you know, here's my phone number, and then you can ask them to a drink. And they're more inclined to go for something that's going to be a bad drink than a good drink.
Well, I'm glad you associated some positive meaning that we can take from this right away now, can't we? Good.
just to throw out a very crude example.
No, I was thinking a very realistic possibility.
Yeah, yeah. There's all sorts of different, in sales, they have the different techniques for if you want to increase your sales, you do a specific number technique. You have the 3 and you have the one that's priced this way versus one that's priced that way.
You're talking about the contrast frame.
That's right.
Like where you show somebody instead of showing them, like said, for example, if they want to walk in and buy a TV and you're a TV salesman, you show them a $500 TV and then a $1,000 TV.
Right.
The $1,000 TV seems much, much more out of reach. But if you show them a $10,000 TV first, then the $1,000 TV,
right,
their mind frames things in a different,
right,
a different light.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's important for, I mean, if you didn't do that in sales, most people wouldn't actually know what the value was.
Right. So you got to pre-frame the value.
Yeah. And that's both good for you and for them, because if they buy your product and they don't value it, you don't get the return sale, you don't get the talk, you don't get the word of mouth, you,
right,
don't get anything.
Plus they feel like they've been taken advantage of.
Exactly.
A friend of mine calls that exchange, calls the principle of showing positive value exchange in abundance.
Right. Right.
Giving them much more value than they thought they got.
I like that.
No matter what they paid. Because it's not a matter of the money, as you know.
That's it.
It's one of my favorite things to say. It's never about the money.
That's true.
Good.
So, now that we've talked about that.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you a question.
All right. I'll see if I have an answer.
All right. When you imagine having people with their minds full all the time, because that's the thing, is all these people around us have their minds full almost all the time.
Mm-hmm. Texting and driving, for example.
Right. Makeup and driving. Drinking.
Coffee in the lap.
That's right.
That's it. Yeah.
Burger in the other hand. Sometimes a taco. Makes it a little tricky.
Easy to fill up the chunks.
Yes.
The slots of information.
Because
there's slots of information out there that you can process through.
Yeah.
So it takes up those 7 plus or minus 2 chunks pretty simply. Your question was?
My question is, if you're running into people every day that have their chunks filled, and you are trying to just communicate with them without having to deal with those chunks, what would be your favorite way to de-chunk them?
Ah, very interesting. The de-chunking.
Yes.
Getting them to focus their attention on a single topic.
I like that.
Like the idea of suggesting simply that those things around you may disappear as we continue this conversation. As you focus all your attention on the conversation now, what is it that's most important to you about our outcome today? I'm just curious.
That's really good.
Thanks.
That's really, really
good.
Is
that the answer you were hoping for?
Yes. That is absolutely the answer I was hoping for.
Good, because we didn't script this.
No, we didn't.
Okay, good.
And that was a very advanced technique that had at least, from what I could count, probably about 11 different layers.
Good.
So that's the kind of stuff that we want to kind of
dissect some of these things for you.
Yes, breach the wall of making this very advanced technique sometimes a little bit more accessible.
Cool. I like that idea.
Yeah.
It's always fun to deliver content that people think that has been kind of sequestered and hidden for a long time. You know, it's the techniques aren't complicated,
right,
but they do require some practice to make them work and not seem contrived.
Right.
Because it's always fun when you get somebody who's newly trained, let's say they've taken an NLP class where they've read Frogs into Princes and think they're an expert.
Yes.
And they want to throw out some very cleverly undisguised language patterns. You know, you can buy my product as you continue to listen to me talk to you today. But in those ideas, they are so obvious and so blatant that even people who are not trained pick them up and go, what are you doing?
Right.
And that's not the frame that you want your client to be in.
Yeah, puts them in a confusion frame, which
confused minds do not buy.
That's right.
So the idea of layering those commands in and layering different languaging techniques in order to simply suggest to the unconscious mind a certain pattern to run. Kind of the metaphor that we use is the train track. You know, if you build a little train track, the train always runs on the same track. And so if you allow the track to run, well, let me give you a metaphor example here.
Okay.
If I were to just simply say, think of the word bow, what's the first thing that comes to your mind?
In karate,
right. You're bowing. Most people, without any framework at all to run in, will think when they hear the word bow, they will think, you know, to lean forward at the waist.
Right.
To bow to someone.
Right.
However, if I were to start that by saying, you know, there's an interesting thing about ships. Ships are very interesting. And sometimes you'll see a ship in a harbor, and a ship sitting in the harbor will be you know, sitting there. Maybe it's being repaired. Maybe it's being cleaned. We don't know. Maybe it's just waiting for that particular time when it's time to take this voyage. And I may tell a metaphor about a ship, and I may talk a lot about it. And there'll be, you know, different characters that may come on board, and the ship may represent the conscious mind. You know, the captain representing the conscious mind, the crew representing the unconscious mind. I may turn it into that metaphor. But after telling that story, if then I ask you, when I say the word bow, what comes to your mind?
Then you would have the ship, the bow of the ship.
Most people think of the front of the boat.
Right.
Right? So simply telling that metaphor gives the unconscious mind a track to run on that later on, when I say a certain word, the unconscious mind will already frame it in a particular context, creating a completely different picture, or internal representation, or IR, as we put it,
right.
Creating a completely different picture around those words that we use. So pre-framing is the idea of creating that track for the unconscious mind of your client to run on.
This is really advanced stuff.
It's good stuff, right?
Well, let's jump back a step. So, for example, what we're actually talking about.
Maybe deconstruct it a little bit.
Yeah. What we're talking about is Ericksonian language.
Yes.
Conversational hypnosis.
Right. Milton Erickson, one of the best, if not the most renowned and best hypnotherapists of our time.
Yes.
Used metaphor and stories virtually exclusively.
Yes.
To create deep change in clients.
And the amount of deep metaphors that he had were just incredible. Mm. They were something that had layer upon layer upon layer.
And many different conversations at one time going on with the unconscious.
Yes. So when we talk about Ericksonian language, we're talking about using not just like specific words.
Correct.
But the pattern of the words.
Right.
The structure of the language, because there's no magic word. There's no magic, oh, if I say this, then they're going to buy something.
Right.
There's just, or they're going to change their life, or they're going to do whatever. There is a pattern, and that pattern is based on what they want.
And it's always easier. Well, the thing that I like to say in my influence classes is that influence is not about getting people to do what you want them to do.
Right.
Influence is about getting people to want to do what you want them to do.
Right.
As though it were their idea. Because if you try to convince someone, they can resist. But if they think it's their idea, they will absolutely guard that with everything they have.
Right.
And so our goal in persuasion, our goal in influencing other people, is to create an idea in such a way that it is theirs. And it truly feels like their own creation. And that's where it goes from superficial, technical-type application to really understanding how the unconscious works, or the other-than-conscious mind works.
Right.
And creating the tracks on many different layers, like as you said, so that the other-than-conscious can create the pictures that we want them to create.
Right.
Just getting too deep.
No, I actually think this is we're kind of still on the upper layer, if you will.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good. Because I want
we want to make this accessible.
We want you to have fun with the idea and the concept, and so we'll give you some deep layers, and then we'll come back and kind of deconstruct.
Yes.
And then, of course, you'll be able to ask questions at some point.
Yes.
That we can answer for you.
Yeah, I should probably make an email for that.
Okay,
I'll do that. So, if we have all this language that we're structuring, that we're putting together, and we're actually creating an idea that we want to, let's say we want to use it to get a raise, or what if we wanted to actually use it, because we know we can use it on other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
What if we wanted to use it on ourselves?
Oh my gosh. You mean actually influence yourself?
Yeah.
To do something that you want to do?
Because, you know, we're always running into ourselves.
Yeah. And that's really a great key that you mentioned. Because, I mean, before anybody can actually influence anybody else, there's that whole self thing.
Yeah. Well, we're always getting in our own way. We're our own worst enemy.
Right.
And if we have a tool that allows us to get out of our own way and makes it so that we can actually go where we want to do, to me, that seems like one of the most incredible tools that people should be able to have.
Absolutely. And let's talk about the mechanics of that for just a minute from like a quantum physics standpoint, about how, you know, I mean, we've all experienced, I'm sure, the idea that you can look at someone else's problem, relate to it because you're familiar with the problem yourself, and go, oh my gosh, that's such a simple solution. All you have to do is blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Exactly. All you have to do is X, Y, Z. Come on, can't you see that? And of course, the answer is no, they can't.
Right, exactly.
Because the idea is that the, okay, so let's talk about the structure of a problem. Right, the structure of a belief that creates a problem is the boundary that we create by the words that we use to represent the problem. So let's say I have a problem that says, I'm not good enough. So the words, I'm not good enough, create a boundary inside the neurology that contains the problem. If I'm inside the problem and everything I look is through the filter of I'm not good enough, it's as though I'm stuck inside the middle of the problem. And so everywhere I look, the problem exists.
Right.
Because of the boundary that I've created with the words, I'm not good enough.
Right.
So in order to get out of that frame, we can't, from inside the problem, see the solution. Because the only thing we can see is the problem that we've created by the boundaries. That's why it's so easy for somebody else from outside the situation to go, well, dude, it's not a problem.
Yeah.
I have to do is this. There's a solution, very easy. But they go, oh, wait a minute. I don't see that solution. Because they're stuck inside that energy of the problem.
I'll give you an example of that.
Brilliant.
I have a friend of mine, a client of mine, who uses and relies on the internet.
Mm.
In fact, he doesn't even have a regular cell phone. He has an internet phone.
Okay.
So when his internet went down for almost a week, he was like isolated from the entire world in his own little bubble. And I finally got in hold of him, and he was just like, he was trapped in his own little bubble. He couldn't figure out a way to contact people without buying a cell phone, spending all this money, and doing all these things. Until I finally just said, well, I mean, why don't you just go to the library? Or Starbucks, or McDonald's, or any place that has free Wi-Fi. There's so many, and it, as soon as I said that, he was like, I don't know why I didn't think of that.
Right, because the problem was my internet's down.
Right.
And right. As long as he created that particular construct, my internet is down,
right.
The unconscious filters that you talked about earlier deleted every other possibility.
Yep.
It's like the unconscious mind cannot process the millions of bits once you create a filter.
Right.
This is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the other filters we create.
Okay.
Right? Anything that you say that you believe becomes your truth.
Yes.
Right? My internet is down is, at that point in time, was his truth.
Yeah.
And he had some kind of causal statement to make it work. My internet's down because it's not working.
Right.
Or whatever it is.
That's what it was.
So my internet's not working, therefore I'm cut off from the rest of the world. That very pattern, that suggestion, allows the unconscious mind to say, okay, so delete all other unpertinent, unrelated information.
Pretty much.
So any other information that comes in is automatically deleted until you broke the pattern.
Right.
And said, okay, wait a second, let's do this. Have you considered this other solution? And fortunately for him, he was at a place where the belief wasn't strong enough
right.
to continue the deletion.
Right.
And so it allowed you to pop him out of the pattern.
What would be an example of something that's strong enough?
Well, let's talk about really deep-rooted issues.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that the internet being down...
It's not that big
of a deal. ...is temporary.
Yeah.
You know, it carries with it the idea that a solution is forthcoming.
Right.
Right? It's just a temporary situation. But let's go back to the I'm not good enough routine, which a lot of people run.
Right.
That pattern of I'm not good enough is a deep-rooted, probably or oftentimes programmed from an early age... Probably not even your stuff, but someone else's stuff that they gave you.
Yep.
And when they give you their stuff, you believe it, and it becomes your truth, but you don't know why.
Right.
So that filter doesn't have the illusion of temporary. It's an embedded filter. So everything you do eventually gets processed through that.
And then you have to deal with the after effect of that, which is being stuck in that box.
Right, because the results... will, you know, let's say that you run everything through the filter of I'm not good enough, then you get a result that isn't, let's say, up to whatever standard you hold yourself to, probably perfection.
Right.
let's say that you don't have a perfect result, that result then becomes, oh, well, I got a less than substantial result, therefore I reinforce the belief that I'm not good enough.
Right.
Because everything I try to do comes out with a substandard result, therefore it reinforces the belief, creating a loop.
Right.
And it strengthens the belief. And if that's been going on for, you know, a number of years, that's a deep-seated condition now. It's a conditioned place in the neurology.
Very much so.
Right.
So if they have this condition, this mm-hmm. this place within their psyche that they are going to constantly, it becomes a behavior. It becomes something that they're conditioning themselves into as comfortable.
Right. Almost an identity.
Right.
The identity is I am
right.
not good enough.
Right.
Or I am.
And they'll always go to that. Every mm-hmm. time somebody tries to confront or change that, they will automatically flip into, but I am.
Mm-hmm.
But I am always, but I'm
yeah.
consistently.
It's a consistent pattern. So how do you pop somebody out of that? How do you break that?
Break somebody out of the box?
The big box. The deep box.
The deep box.
The deep rut.
Well, if you were going to break somebody out of the deep box, you need to make sure that you wiggle it a little bit first.
Loosen the problem.
That's right. You have yeah. to loosen the, you always have to loosen the problem.
I don't have my pen, but this is the metaphor that we use for those of you watching visually is having a pen, and this is my problem.
Yes.
So change it. Help me.
Yes.
And if I can't let go, then we can't change the problem.
Right.
But if we can loosen the grip on the reality of the problem, or maybe allow the reality to accept more than one solution, then we can loosen the grip.
So, absolutely.
Proceed.
So if we were going to loosen the problem, to get them to lessen their grasp on the problem, we have different language patterns that we can use that will allow us to do that.
That's right.
We have different techniques that allow us to say, for example, if they were constantly not good enough,
right,
that they might be good enough.
Right. So, like, when did you decide you weren't good enough?
Right.
How would you know if that wasn't true?
Exactly.
Those kinds of things.
Yes.
Simple patterns that make you go to a place of other than problem. And as long as we can take someone into a place of other than problem, it holds the potential of popping them out of the box,
right,
getting them into solution land,
right,
which is anything other than the problem at this point.
Right.
Good.
So if we have they might be able to be rid of that problem, that gives them the possibility, because mm-hmm. Having the possibility did not exist to them
mm-hmm.
until you gave them that possibility.
Right.
Because they were so stuck on holding that possibility or that non-possibility until you gave it to them, and they said, oh, well, maybe I don't have to hold on to this problem so hard.
Right. Let's talk about another possible language pattern that can get someone out of the identity category.
Okay.
Because an identity is the toughest thing to change, right?
Yes.
Once someone says, I am whatever it is, I am depressed, I am...
I would say the toughest thing to change.
That's among those, though. Okay. It's a deep-seated, a deep-running...
Okay.
The identity runs really deep and really unconscious.
Yes, it does.
It's a very unconscious filter, content-free.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and everything filters through that identity. So what if you were to take, instead of saying, I am depressed, which is the I am frame, I am being... kind of an identifier. So if someone says, I am, we're going to have to deconstruct this a little bit
okay.
first, aren't we?
Yes.
Let's talk about the difference between a behavior
okay.
and an identity.
All right.
So a behavior is an I do something. Right?
Yes.
Prime example, a lot of people, particularly spiral dynamics.
Spiral dynamics, okay.
An orange mode of thinking would say something like, I am a real estate broker.
Right.
I am a stockbroker. I am a salesman, giving it the identity of a salesperson. Now, this kind of frame,
right.
the stock market crashes, I am a stockbroker, and that's my identity that's related to the stock market. These are the kind of guys that jump off the bridge
right.
when the stock market crashes and they right. lose all this money. My occupation is a stockbroker or a real estate agent, frames it differently. You can try it on for yourself. Say to yourself, I am, then whatever your occupation is. Or say to yourself, my occupation is whatever it is. Notice the difference in those feelings.
Right.
When you frame it as the I am frame, it's more of an identity level. It shifts it inside the neurology. So let's say someone says, I am depressed. I am whatever it is. Well, we could use a medical label.
Right.
Right. Or I have this particular situation.
I am a smoker.
I am a smoker. Very good. that identity is something that everything filters through. If if you're at a barbecue and you're talking to your friends as a smoker, it's nothing for you to initiate a behavior that supports that value of smoking. So you can light up a cigarette and be completely congruent with it because the identity of a smoker is there. So let's talk about something different. What if I am feeling depressed? Instead of I am depressed, I'm feeling depressed. How does that change where that sits? Totally different energy. What if you create,
I actually had a client this week that would consistently say, my disorder is people who have this that I have do this. And I had to reframe them and say, you have to say what I'm dealing with is this. It's not something you are.
Correct.
You didn't go to the store and buy it.
Right.
You had to accomplish this in some way.
Right. And a lot of times people will get that diagnosis and they'll say, oh, you have ADD. You're ADD.
Right.
Right. Oh, gosh. Wow. I'm so happy. Now I understand why I am the way I am.
Right.
Baloney.
And they'll grab onto it and they'll hold onto it as hard as they can.
It becomes like an identifier and says, okay, now I know why I am the way I am.
Right.
Instead of saying, look, sometimes in my behavior, sometimes I do X, Y, Z.
Right.
Whatever it is. Sometimes in my behavior, I'm very creative. Isn't creativity often mislabeled as, well, that's that's another conversation we'll put off. But labels are just labels. How you accept the meaning of those labels changes the way that they feel inside.
Absolutely. Because if you hold on to a label, you're going to search out what that means to you, and then you're just giving yourself more things that may fit you, when does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Right. Well, the other than conscious mind will look for support for whatever it is you say.
Right.
Exactly. So if you say, I'm depressed, then your other than conscious mind will look for places where you are and reinforce that. Oh, yeah, you look at your physiology. Oh, yeah, your head's down and your breathing shallow and your shoulders are slumped and you're saying those things inside your head that make you feel depressed. Oh, my gosh, you really are. Look at that.
Exactly.
It's amazing. What if you say, I'm just feeling a little depressed? Doesn't that imply that it's temporary?
It does. Cool. For sure.
Because emotions come in waves. I was thinking about this. You know, people think, well, I want to be happy. As though you can be happy all the time. But emotions are waves. You don't live high on the wave all the time. You know, the emotions are just like the waves that come in. Sometimes they'll be small if they're just less intense. Sometimes they'll be really tall. Sometimes they're like tsunami, right?
Right.
And they'll bear down on you. I was having this conversation with somebody the other day about sales, right? So often salespeople will come from a completely features and benefits related kind of a digital sort of a presentation where they'll just relate, hey, this is what my product does, this is what my service does, without ever creating any emotional charge.
Right.
Right. They'll just give the information. And they can't imagine when faced with this wonderful amount of information why people still don't buy from them. Well, it's because you haven't created any emotion.
Exactly.
Right? It's like imagine trying to surf on a very calm ocean with zero waves. Well, you can paddle all you want, but there's not going to be any momentum to carry you anywhere you want to go.
Right.
If you, in a sales situation, can create that wave of emotion and then carry the information up on top, it's like surfing on top of the wave, the client will take that process into the next level really easily. But a lot of people don't understand that you have to create that emotion. I call it opening the emotional gateway in advanced persuasion.
Yep. And having that emotional gateway open is actually something that we want. It's something that we want to be able to have that connection with other people around us.
Yeah, because, I mean, the power of influence is in the power of controlling emotion.
Right.
Both yours and theirs.
Right.
So if you can control emotion, even sometimes, if we want to go that way, even sometimes controlling emotions that some people would call negative or unresourceful, even those emotions are powerful.
Right.
You know, because if you can get someone into an away framework, an away from motivation, you can still motivate them.
Right.
You know, and motivation is key. And motivation always comes from emotion.
Talking a little bit about the we're crossing the gray area. Crossing
the line. All right, really back in.
And maybe someday we'll actually put out some of the gray area stuff. But well, for now, for now, we'll just talk about. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll tone it back in. That's what you get for not scripting the conversation. Not even any bullet points.
It's the fun part.
That is the fun part. Yeah. Because as Einstein, I believe it was, said, if you don't know something well enough to explain it to your grandmother, you don't know it well enough.
That's right. That's right.
Or somebody said something.
I
said something similar to that just a few moments ago.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln said, you can find anybody's quote on the internet.
I love it. And if it's on the internet, therefore it must be true.
That's right. That's right.
Like, yeah. Okay.
How will you put a bow on that?
A bow on this one. I hope you guys have fun with this, because we're just here to have a good time. And I feel like if we can have fun teaching it, you can have fun learning it. And we may go off on tangents once in a while, but trust us, we'll probably get back around to a place where you can realize where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if not, if anything, tune in next time.
Yeah. And it'll just layer in.
And if you have questions.
Yes.
Too bad. No, Nate's going to set up a response email for you so you can send questions to
the website? podcast@sigilsocial.org.
There we go. How's podcast@sigilsocial.org. Yes. S-I-G-I-L. Social. S-O-C-I-A-L.org.
Yes.
Cool.
So, which is where the podcast is right now. It's at Sigil Social. So, because it is SigilCast, if you visit SigilCast on sigilsocial.org, you can click on it and see more information about each podcast as we post them. You can see all our past podcasts. If you go to
rapidempowerment.com,
you can see a link to Sigil Social and SigilCast, and you'll be able to get there and listen to Jay and listen to us.
And we'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
As we always do. Because it's just a good time, and, you know, learning doesn't have to be a boring thing. Learning should be fun and exciting, and if we can bring that to you, then awesome.
Yep. Yep.
Good for everyone.
So I'm Nate Fowler.
And I'm Jay Williams.
And this is SigilCast.
Have fun.